Welcome to Pod Skiwiwi. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, it is April. It is one of my favorite times of the year. Have you been keeping up with the madness? Are you into the NCAA basketball tournaments? Or is this, because I know you're a big basketball guy, or is this something that college basketball, not huge up here as it maybe used to be back when we were, say, in our earlier years, children and teenagers, but you still follow the madness a little bit? Because I can't lie, I've gotten into it big time.
I do follow the madness a little bit. I did watch some of it on the weekend. I haven't been watching it as closely as I have in the past. But that being said, I still know that I'm missing out on a ton of excitement because it truly is one of the best tournaments in the world. And, that single game elimination, we were talking about it before the show. You don't have to have the superstars, that next NBA superstar in the tournament because the games itself are so exciting, given the nature of the one game elimination. So I haven't been following it as closely as I'd like to, but I know I'm missing out.
I always feel about March Madness, and I don't know why, but this year I got into it way more than I haven't. Like, I'm always into it, but this year I felt way more invested. I don't really know why I felt that way, but I've been watching a lot of the games, staying like the first couple of rounds when they play like all day Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and it's like the game start at like 12:30 and go until midnight. Even if you're not, and I'm not really all that familiar with college basketball players because they don't, saying they don't matter as much is probably unfair, but it's not that it's different now when it comes to guys going to the NBA. They're one and dones, or they're playing in Europe, or they're playing across the world. Like, you think of some of the best players in the NBA today, and how many of them are former American college players? You know, like, even if you take out your guys like LeBron, who jumped straight from high school, Giannis, do you know where? He didn't play college basketball. Luka, Victor Wembanyama, like all the guys that are sort of have emerged, like Joel Embiid did, I guess. I believe he played at Kansas, but like all the guys that kind of have taken over the game didn't really play college basketball. They got to the league through other means, but it's still so much fun that like the single elimination aspect of it, like you said, is just, it's the best part of it. And I just wish to kind of put this into like what we normally talk about. I wish that we could find a way to like capture this with like Canadian sports. And I know that that's probably, it definitely is pie in the sky. It's fantasy, but man, like, the way, like, if this is the perfect tournament, and I know that they want to expand it and ruin it, like they, like, I don't even like that first four that they do where they have like playing games. I think that's kind of silly. Like 64 teams, single elimination. Like, it's just, it's a perfect made for TV event. You know what I mean? Like, it has all the drama. It's a reality show. Yeah. Sometimes there's blowouts and the good teams, by the time you get to the end, usually emerge, but like, the Oakland story with this guy who's got a hairline that goes further back than me, that looks like he could be my slightly younger brother, hits 10 three-pointers in a game and they knock off Kentucky. It's like the upset nature of it. This is the best time of year if you're into like just the, it reminds me a lot in a lot of ways of how people, and I know you're going to just calm down before I say it, how people get about like the World Cup or about like international tournaments, like the Olympics even. You don't really know these guys all that much. Like, you watch the Olympics and you're cheering for Canadian guys and gals, and you don't follow swimming or speed skating or any of those things throughout the year. But the Olympics comes around and everyone's an expert on, badminton and the luge. I feel the same way about March Madness. Like, it's a little bit of a fraud. I don't watch this all the time. I barely watch it. Maybe I'm sitting on the couch on a Sunday afternoon and, February after the NFL season ends and I'm looking for some, there's a college basketball game, I'll throw it on and have it as background noise. But it's just so much fun. It's hard not to get wrapped up into it,
Yeah, I've always had a tough time getting into college basketball before the tournament starts.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's tons of great basketball to watch in the States with college basketball before the tournament starts. But yeah, once you get into the tournament, then you're fully involved and you're just, you get kind of swept away in the excitement of it all. And I was watching, I think it was NC State.
Oh, yeah, with the big DJ Burns Jr. He's my new favorite player, buddy.
Yeah, he looked like he was 45 years old. Is that the guy? He was incredible.
Big dude.
Good player. Yeah, big dude. He looked a little bit elderly, but he kind of reminded me of Greg Oden back in the day.
Oh, see, like he was, You know who I was gonna pull an even older player. Now, I was a teenager, so you're probably a little younger, obviously. But remember the Big O, Oliver Miller?
Yeah, he played for the Raptors. Pacers?
Played for a bunch of teams. He played for a bunch Pacers, of teams. He played right, for the too? Raptors. Pardon yeah. me.
He played for the Pacers as well. I want to say.
I believe so. Big dude. Yeah. Just big dude. Yeah. Yeah. Clearly, like you looked at him, you're like, how is this guy a basketball player? But he was like 6'9". So it's like, well, that's how. That's what this mm-hmm. guy reminds me of. Like, he doesn't look like he should be athletic, but he's out there and he's doing spin moves and he's backing players down. I think that's also what I like about the March Madness as well, is that it's very much a throwback to, like, I love the NBA. But it's 3 points and dunks. And that's what the yeah. game's become. And that makes sense. You high percentage shots, analytics, all that. I'm mm-hmm. not complaining. But with college, like the talent gap is so disparate that, for instance, Purdue, Zach Edey, 7'4" kid from Toronto. It's like, you know what? No one else has that guy. Throw the ball into him, and he's a college version of Shaq. No one can stop him. He drops 40 points on I think it was Sunday to lead Purdue to Final Four. So it's like you kind of get that throwback to when we were kids watching like the Knicks and the Shaq and the Lakers or the Magic or the Rockets with Hakeem, like. Mm-hmm. Spurs, David Robinson, like the big guys, the reason you watched basketball, the reason I got into basketball is like these freaks of nature, these 7-foot monsters. And it's like watching them play. And it's like, yeah, I got no problems with the modern game. And I get it that the games change and we're going to talk about how the Canadian football game might change later on today. But you kind of see that throwback and reminds me of watching those. Like some people would say, oh, they're really boring games, but it's like, oh man, that's my foundation of interest in basketball. So to mm-hmm. see that, again, it kind of got me a little amped up. Although, like I said, I do admit that I feel a little fraudulent being like talking about this stuff just because I don't spend any time watching it. So I don't know who's good and who's not, but it's still, you just get swept up in all the fun of it. And it's hard not to be just attached to this for the 3 weeks that it goes on in the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't feel bad about it. I think that 95% of the people that watch March Madness probably don't pay attention much to it. To college basketball before the tournament starts. So I wouldn't feel too badly about that.
All right. But what we do pay attention to here, rather, thank you for the segue there. I was waiting for how we could bump into actually talking about what we came here today to talk about. We got some Ticats news to talk about. And the first thing we're going to do here is Javian Elliott, the defensive back for the Ticats that signed last year, announced his retirement on social media. The team has not yet confirmed that he will not be returning, but Three Down Nation, my former employer, did confirm. I can't remember if it was Hodge or Dunk. I think it was Dunk who confirmed that they've reached out to Elliott, and he had said after the post that he's not coming back. He's retiring. Spent 3 years in the CFL, his first two with the Calgary Stampeders, and then last year he was with the Ticats. He had a decent season. He started 14 games. He had 32 tackles, 3 interceptions, was fairly good in the secondary, maybe one of their best secondary players last season. But he did miss the final third of the season with a knee injury, and now he has decided to hang them up. So I don't think there's a ton for us to say about Elliott's time in Hamilton because it was so short, but what were your initial thoughts, whether it impacted the team or the player or what have you, when you saw this news? Was there anything that first kind of sprung to mind?
Well, I was a little bit surprised because of his age and his short duration in the league, only 3 years, like you mentioned. A guy that, you know, had a lot of potential but never really rose to the, you know, stratosphere of all-star or star player in the CFL, had the potential but never got to it. But my initial thought was, okay, there's going to be an opening at the boundary side halfback position for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and that was basically it. I wish him all the best in retirement, but to me, it's not a huge deal, right? He played well last year, but I think it's time for a younger guy to step up into that position, perhaps.
Yeah, he was a good player, but he's not irreplaceable. Like he's not some, like you said, he wasn't an all-star type guy. And I remember when the team signed him last year, it was like, well, okay, this is kind of curious. Didn't really know much about him. You look him up. I think he'd only played like 5 games for the Stamps because he dealt with various injuries. So it's maybe not too surprising that he suffers the knee injury late last year. Maybe that was a reason for him hanging him up. But I like you, I wasn't overly concerned with, oh, this is a huge loss. Like it's a loss because it's a veteran guy and that it dings you a little bit and it brings up more questions. And if you remember back to the last episode we did, we were going to spend today talking about the offensive line and we were going to do our roster breakdown like we've done before. But this news, we decided to pivot So we're going to talk about the secondary today because it feels more urgent to talk about this now, because now there is kind of a question in that secondary, maybe a second question, because I think we kind of knew who, with Elliott coming back, who four of the five starters were kind of guaranteed. And now maybe we still do, maybe we don't. I guess I'll get your opinion on that in a second. But do you feel as if this retirement will affect the Ticats in any measurable way? Or do you think this won't have an effect on the team at all? Do you think this is a big deal? You kind of already answered, I guess, but you kind of feel like it's not that big a deal then, eh?
Yeah, I don't see it. I don't foresee it being a major loss for the secondary. I don't see, you know, Javion Elliott, I'm sure, is a very good player, but I just don't see him being irreplaceable. I think you can get a guy who maybe, you know, a Kenneth George or a guy that's been with the team a year and is going into their second year, and maybe we find a guy that, you know, is a superstar, like legitimately. You know, that's wishful thinking, but I don't think it's going to affect the team overall in a big way.
All right, so let's talk about the secondary then. We'll just jump right into that, because I think we've kind of wrung this well dry with Javion Elliott, quite honestly. Because again, like I said, we played here 1 year, didn't make a huge mark. So we're going to use this, though, as a launching point to talk about the secondary as a whole. Here's what the Ticats have so far, and I think we'll both agree, Jamal Peters, Stavros Katsantonis, and Richard Leonard, you can pretty much pencil them in, mark them, maybe even permanent marker them in starting roles, right? Like, you'd be, barring injury, it'd be really surprising if those three guys weren't in the starting lineup in week one, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
So behind them, you mentioned Kenneth George. He started every game last year, including the playoffs. He played in multiple positions. He played where Jamal Peters plays, so he was going to move regardless. Where do you think, do you have him penciled in as a starter? And looking at the makeup of the set, like, Peters is going to play that boundary corner role. Katsantonis is going to play safety. Where would you put Richard Leonard? And then where do you have Kenneth George kind of slotting in? Because do you think he's kind of the next in line? Maybe not a guaranteed starting spot, but you'd be pretty surprised if he wasn't given the opportunity to win one of those roles?
Yeah, I would expect Kenneth George Jr. to be in that boundary side halfback position. I think he showed a lot of improvements as we went along in the season last year, and I think he deserves a shot, you know, having a starting position in the secondary.
Yeah, and he did play boundary halfback last year when Elliott went out. They moved him there, and I think they put Will Sunderland
in the playoff game. He played the halfback position.
Yeah, so Leonard, would you put Leonard then? So you got Peters at boundary corner, George at boundary half. Is Leonard Katsantonis at safety? Leonard, do you have him at field half or field corner? Where do you think would the best place for it? Because I think he's a field half. I know he can play field corner, but here my thinking is, you play him at field half. You put one of the newer guys at field corner because they get less work. You know what I mean? You can kind of hide them there a little bit, maybe kind of like your fifth Canadian receiver. You know, you can kind of hide them on the wide side. I kind of feel the same thing. What about you? Would you play Leonard at halfback, or do you play him at corner?
I'd play him at halfback, but it is interesting to know that he played cornerback in the playoff game last year, and Lawson was the halfback. Yep. But I think even though he's very versatile and can play halfback or cornerback, wherever you want him to play, I think he fits better. I think more naturally is a halfback than a cornerback. I think that's where he's played most of his career, no?
Yeah, oh, for sure. I know he came into the league and he started with the Ticats as a corner, the field corner. But then I believe in his rookie season where he was, I think it was 2017, and I'm fairly certain he was named the team's rookie of the year that year, if I'm not mistaken. I think they eventually moved him during the season from corner to halfback. I know there's some listener out there is going to either correct me or agree with me, but that's what I recall. Granted, 2017 is quite some time ago, so my memory's not exactly the best, but that leaves open then field corner. And you look at the team, you mentioned Dexter Lawson. He played some halfback last year. We talked about Will Sunderland. I brought him up briefly. He's played some corner for this team. Yeah. But then you have kind of a group of incoming American guys, Shabari Davis, Arquan Bush, Caleb Biggers, Destin Talbert, Michael Jaquette, David Vereen, who was with the team briefly last year. I'm kind of taking out Patrick Burke Jr., Robert Panabaker, because I don't think those are backup safeties to Katsantonis. I don't think they're really in the mix. But you have this group of new guys. You have a couple of younger returning players. How do you kind of right now, if I was to say, Mike, pick your fifth secondary guy, who are you going with? And then what do you think? Is there one or two names out of this that you've looked at throughout the offseason of some of these new signings that you're kind of like, maybe this guy could be someone that could make a move and maybe steal a starting position in training camp?
Well, I initially was thinking that Sunderland would play that cornerback position. Mm-hmm. He played cornerback on the boundary side last year. I don't know if that transition is a difficult one from go to the boundary of the field, but probably not, because that's where you get, you know, the least action at the field corner position. So my assumption would be the Sunderland to play that fifth position in the secondary. But anything can happen in training camp, right? There might be a new guy, like you mentioned, that comes in and, you know, really opens up the coaching staff's eyes and he becomes a starter. But if I would have to bet right now, I would say Sunderland.
Yeah, it's weird because I feel like Sunderland is more naturally a corner, but Lawson had more experience last year. Like Lawson started a fair amount of games last year because when Elliott went down, it necessitated a bunch of moves. And did someone else get hurt last year in the secondary? Or am I, maybe I'm just, oh, they tried Lawrence Woods at corner. Remember then that didn't work.
Yeah, the beginning of the year. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that necessitated some changes there as mm-hmm. well. That's what, because I was like, why did Lawson come into the lineup? Because he didn't start the year as the starter. So like that, you kind of move some stuff around there as well. I remember they had like a Delacay was starting at halfback and like that didn't really work all that well. So probably one of the reasons why he's not here anymore. So like to me, Sunderland feels like, because of the corner experience, feels like the more natural fit. But then I do wonder, with Lawson having had more experience, he started 6 or 7 games, if I'm not mistaken, last year. He played more. I think he started more than Sunderland did. Makes me wonder if maybe they could move him over to corner. And then there's some of these new guys that maybe if you want to get into in a second. But I'm just it really feels like those two guys, in my opinion, are like kind of the leaders in the clubhouse for their job. And I guess it depends on which one has the skills to do it. And it's obviously not something we're going to see until training camp opens. But I do wonder if having that extra bit of experience gives Lawson a little bit of an edge, or if Sunderland's maybe a more natural corner. Then, of course, there's also the differences in the coaching staff, right? Like the defensive coordinator is the same, but all of those positional coaches are different. So maybe they want to do something. Like there's a lot of question marks when it comes to what the team could potentially be looking for. Makes it kind of interesting. Would you in any way think George could be, because I've seen some people say like Kenneth George for boundary corner, because he's flopping from field corner or from boundary corner to field corner, I should say. I just feel as if he might be better used as a halfback. You know what I mean? Like I think he's mm-hmm. he's got that extra experience. Like he started the entire season last year. But I have seen that. Would you consider that as a move and maybe put Lawson? Like there's definitely some questions here. I'm just I don't know where everyone kind of fits as of yet, because we got to throw in that wild card of a new coaching staff.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Lawson could play that position as well. I don't have, you know, Sutherland better than Lawson. I don't have them one or two. It's just kind of like a big question mark in my eyes, which guy gets that position. And then there's the new guys as well. So I see many different possibilities. We know that the three guys are set in stone in the secondary, but after that, there's two openings and a lot of guys are going to have to battle it out. And it should be interesting to see who gets those spots, because we came into last year with like, it's set in stone, right? We had like an all-star unit, or the year before, and it didn't necessarily work. So it didn't necessarily work out. So maybe having, you know, a nice mix of some veterans and some newer players will be the magic potion for the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
I mean, it would be Ticats discussion if there wasn't people losing their minds over the fact that not every single position is filled with a 10-year veteran who knows the game inside and out. Are you concerned in any way with how the secondary looks right now? Because bringing in Jamal Peters, I think, kind of makes everything else easier in a way, because he's so mm-hmm. good at what he does that he's going to kind of shut down that side of the field. And then we saw Katsantonis have a breakthrough season last year. I know people will always hold that first game against him, but I thought Kenneth George Jr. over the course of the season got better and better every week. And by about midseason, we weren't talking about him anymore. And that's maybe the best thing you can say about a defensive back is you're not constantly bringing up the mistakes he made. And then Richard Leonard is one of those guys who I think is in many ways underrated. Like, I don't think he gets the credit he deserves, but I also I don't think he's the best field halfback in the league, but I think he's better than I think people give him credit for. Are you concerned with the makeup of the secondary? Because maybe it's because I don't put as much stock into this, and because we were burnt in 2022 with, like you said, the loaded secondary, maybe that, because it's like, that didn't work, so why don't you go with something where you can probably, you can use some younger players here and find some guys. Are you at all concerned, or is this one of those things where it's a minor concern? You know what I mean? Like, there's obviously some concern, right? Because there is some question marks there, but is it, you would, if there was any other unit on the team where we're going into the season going, huh, we don't know who two of the five starters are going to be, I think we'd be a little bit more worried if it was receiver or the offensive line. Secondary, I'm not as bothered by it.
No, especially considering, in my opinion, the updates along the defensive line is going to help out that secondary, going to help out the younger guys. And with those three main, with Richard Leonard, Peters, and Kastantonis, you know, being the main three guys in that secondary, I'm not worried. I think the younger guys will step up and will do a fine job, and there won't be a problem with the secondary. That, now, it all depends on coaching as well, but like the players itself, I'm not too concerned about.
Yeah, I think the secondary has more talent than it has some name recognition, but I don't think it has a ton of name recognition. And I think it's maybe
Richard
better
Leonard
than people
was
think.
Older than I thought Richard Leonard was older than what he was too. Apparently he was born in 91, so that's what?
33.
Okay, my math was off. That's kind of getting up there then. But still, like, do you see a drop off from him from year to year? I mean, it was awesome at 32, so I don't see why he would be terrible at 33.
Yeah, I mean, there's always that concern when it comes to any player that's getting into their mid-30s. Yeah. But I don't know. Again, if he's the same player he was last year, I don't think. Like I said, I think he's underrated as a talent. I think he doesn't get the credit he deserves. And I'm not too concerned with his level of play. Like, of course, anything could happen and it could fall off a cliff. Yeah. Like, we've seen that with guys before where they hit a wall, like Speedy B, for example. Like, you would not have thought. Right. That after winning MOP in 2019, he'd be useless by 2022. You know what I mean? Yeah. So at the end of the day, of course it could happen. Am I banking on it? No, I think he's going to be perfectly adequate in his role. And if he'll have another all-star-ish or maybe even an all-star season, I don't really see a huge drop-off coming. But that doesn't say it couldn't. That's not to say it couldn't happen. So where do you think Hamilton's group, maybe because there's questions, it's a little bit harder to answer, because we don't know everything at where everyone's going to line up, but you look at the rest of the secondary groups in the division. And I tried to kind of map out some of the more well-known names, and it's tough to do that. It's more tough to do this, I think, with like the secondary than maybe any other position. Cause guys plays different roles. Like, for instance, Toronto, they have both Royce Mechie and Tunde Adeleke, both very good safeties, but only one of them can play safety. And I saw some Argo fans after they signed Adeleke being like, oh, we can throw Adeleke at field halfback and that'll be great. Now, I'm loath to give Argo fans any sort of insight, but take it from someone who watched Adeleke play field halfback last year. It's not good. He's a talented player. I don't think he can play field halfback. And then like the Argos have some talent there. Like they did lose Peters. They are losing, Stiggers to the NFL. Montreal has a pretty decent secondary. Ottawa's, there's some good things there. There's some question marks there. When you look at what Hamilton has and kind of where they stand now versus the rest of the division, where do you think they stack up with those other units?
Yeah, I have Hamilton at number two. I think Montreal was a really, really strong secondary last year. Obviously, that helped them win the Grey Cup. And they only lost Siante Evans to BC. So I think that unit is still really strong. I have Hamilton at number two. I think that the moves that they made have elevated them over Toronto, because Toronto losing Jamal Peters and then losing a guy like Stiggers to the NFL is going to really hurt them. Not to mention the other players that they've lost on the defensive side of the ball. I think it's only going to hurt them in the secondary. If they can't get pressure on the quarterback, the secondary unit is going to have to cover for longer. So that's why I have them at number three. And Ottawa, they were pretty bad last year in the secondary, and I don't see any, you know, improvements there in that position group. So they're stuck at number four. So to recap, I have Montreal 1, Hamilton 2, Toronto 3, Ottawa 4.
Oh, well, this is incredibly boring because I kind of feel the same way. It's and almost for the same reasons. Like Ottawa at 4, it feels like they're going to be at 4 in a lot of these. And it's simply a fact of, for me, I got to see it. I'm not falling for this trap again. I've seen some people talk about how they've loaded up. And you know what? We've been hearing that now for half a decade, if not longer. And I'm just, show me on the field and then I'll start giving you props. It's as simple as that. The Argos, like you mentioned, they suffered a ton of losses on the defensive side in free agency, but they're not going to finish 16-2 again. They're probably not going to be 15-3. You know what I mean? Like there's going to be a regression there. We started to see what that team looks like when things aren't perfect for them in that East final, when things are going poorly, that the wheels fall off rather quickly. I really like Montreal to me. Maybe we're overvaluing them because they're the defending Grey Cup champs. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know, we just saw these guys do it. It's really hard to kind of find a kink in the armor. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Without even mentioning names, you just look at that unit and you're like, okay, they go like 7 deep in the secondary where like, and then you got to think one of those guys is going to play Sam. Like Montreal's a talent. That's a talented roster. And I think what they did last year is now allowing us to look at them and go, geez, that's a little bit better of a football team than we had any right to think they were. And then, yeah, with Hamilton, there's questions there, but you steal Jamal Peters, who for my money is the best boundary corner in the league. He was, and this is not just because he's signing in Hamilton. Go back and listen to when we talked about free agents we wanted to see here, the top two on my board. And it only became the top one after because we were going to do it. And then Darius Pickett signed. He was number one. Number two is Jamal Peters. I wanted Jamal Peters in Hamilton. So this is not he's no longer an Argo. He's a Ticat now. So you love him. No, Jamal Peters was a Ticat killer. And I hated him in Double Blue. And I wanted to see him in Hamilton. So that's a big get. I am a little concerned with Katsantonis only because not that I don't think he's good. And I've been on him since he was drafted. It's okay. There's no safety net there now. This is your spot. What's he going to do? He's shown no reason not to believe in him. But at the same time, there is a little bit of concern when the guy who filled in for the guy is now the guy. You know what I mean? So I like what Hamilton has, but there's more questions there than there is with Montreal. And with, like I said, with Toronto, it's they've lost a lot. They still have a talented roster, but they've lost a lot. And in that secondary, especially, like I think of sports in this way. If you're a fan of a team and you have a rival team, what you don't want when you think this is what they should do to make them worse, and then you see them do it, which is to me Tunde Delike playing something other than safety. You don't want your rivals being like, yeah, throw that guy out there. Because then it's like, whoa, he played for them. And you know what I mean? Like, I feel as if Argo fans should kind of be listening to us on this. Like, oh, we got a Delicate. It's like, that's great. Canadian, talented player. But if he's not playing safety, he can be a bit of a liability. You know what I mean? So
they do listen to us. I think they do listen to us, Josh, because the number of comments.
I know. The number of comments.
I put a question. Yeah. We get a lot of Argo fans commenting.
But so
I
think they listen to us. Well, but they should not only listen to us, but actually listen to what we're saying.
Yes.
Right. Like, don't just consume it to then go 1999, ha, 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 ha. Listen, like, again, I'm not – Tunde Delike is a talented player, but Tunde Delike should only play safety. This is not – and even – but even, we had Ticat fans when he was a pending free agent. Oh, what if they re-signed him and they could play him at halfback or they could play him at Sam? It's like, he's not – that's not where he's going to play. It sucks to lose a talented player, but Hamilton has a pretty good one in Katsantonis, so it's not as much of a downgrade, but – I look at that and I the regression to the mean is coming for the Argos. They're not going to just steamroll over everyone again. And the losses on defense, I think, are going to be more felt than the losses on offense because all they really lost on offense was a running back. And you can replace those. As we all know, you can find a running back on the street, begging for change.
Put me in, coach. Put me in.
Exactly. Everyone can play running back. It's the easiest job to replace, according to the smart people in the football media world, but they suffered some losses on defense and they suffered a ton of losses. in the secondary, losing their two best secondary players. Like, yeah, I know Mechie's good. I know Deshaun Amos is good. Adeleke is good. McFadden was pretty good. But, like, you lose your best corner, and then you lose your 20-year-old rookie. Like, that's those are tough to replace. Those are when you lose a guy to the NFL, they're hard to replace, especially a guy who now looks like he's going to go on to have a long – he's going to get drafted. He's going to have a long NFL career. Be thankful that you got him for one season. That downgrades them. But Ottawa's just by default is the worst. So, yeah, it doesn't make for a very exciting conversation when we agree, but it's hard not to have them ranked in that order right now. Is I see Montreal really strong. I see Hamilton good, but with questions. I see Toronto decent, but with more questions. And Ottawa's wait and see, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, if Toronto didn't lose those two guys, they would be at or near the top of the list. But like you mentioned, losing guys like Jamal Peters and Stiggers, those are big blows. Those are big blows.
And don't forget Adarius Pickett. You can kind of throw him into throw him into the game that Ottawa got. And that I think that makes them a little bit better. And into what, because he's versatile. He plays Sam linebacker, but he can also play in the secondary as well. Mm-hmm. So that's a big loss for them too, because I think it changes some of the things that the Argos could do on defense. And the Argos lost their defensive coordinator. Like there's been a lot of attrition in Toronto this year. And I think when we look back on 2019 and go, man, that we blew that opportunity there. That should have been the year that they won it all, right? I know the Argos won in 22, so it's not as big of a kick, but I think fans are going to look back on that 2023 season and go, man, did we blow a golden opportunity? Look at the loaded roster we had, and then we lost all those guys. We started losing coaches. Guys started going to the NFL or going to other teams. It's like you're going to regret not getting, because as we saw in Hamilton, now granted a pandemic had a lot to do with that as well, but we saw a team go from 15 wins down to 8. And things can change quickly. Teams don't stay some teams stay bad for a long time, but it's sooner or later, Ottawa's going to get their stuff together. Sooner or later, Edmonton's going to get theirs together. Saskatchewan, Hamilton's not going to be, I know they have been for 15 years, but not going to perpetually be an underachieving team. We're going to see 10, 11 wins or 15 wins. Like you have to take advantage when those things happen. The Argos didn't. And I think they're going to look back on that. Their fan base is going to look back on that and go, that's the one that got away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And the Argonauts have had a historic pattern of winning a Grey Cup and then dropping off the next year. That did not happen in 2023. They didn't win at all, but they had a very good year. Maybe the drop off is coming 2 years after the Grey Cup victory this time.
We can only hope. 2012, they win the Cup. 2013, they're 11-7 and win the division. And Hamilton goes into Skydome and knocks them off. 2014, they're bad. 2015, they're okay. 2016, they're bad, and 2017, they win. Then 2018, 2019, they're bad. So, like, the Argos being on an upward trajectory or even staying consistent is not something you normally see. And now we've seen their quarterback, who shall remain nameless because we don't know who it's going to be, but we've seen their star quarterback play poorly. How is that going to affect him? Like, there's more questions with Toronto than I think Argo fans. Like, everyone's going to be like, well, Dinwiddie's done this, and the team's done that. No one stays on top forever. And sometimes in the CFL, as we can attest as Ticat fans, that time at the top is much shorter than you would think it would be. All right, let's talk about some CFL stuff now. And I guess the biggest news to come out since you and I last recorded was the idea that the league is tinkering or thinking about tinkering with kickoffs. So this comes about as the NFL just made drastic changes to their kickoff procedures. They're following that like XFL model of it's a little convoluted. The NFL made it a little more convoluted than the XFL did, but it's like the coverage team and the returning team like line up like 5 yards away from each other, but no one can move until the ball is caught. It's an attempt to increase the number of kickoffs. And now the CFL has kind of gotten into that as well. But theirs is a little different because it's the CFL, so it has to be. So the big thing from some of the talk of what the CFL is going to do with the kickoff rule is that option that they give teams after a field goal outside of the final 3 minutes, where it's like you can either scrimmage from the 40 or take a kickoff. They're thinking of applying that to touchdowns as well. They're also tinkering with the idea of doing maybe the XFL, now NFL model with where the players are. What do you think about this? Like, do you think that the CFL should be altering their kickoffs? Do you think they should keep it the same? And if they do change it, usually when these things leak, that means changes coming eventually, whether it's this year. I don't think it's going to be this year, obviously. I think they're too far down the road of this season to really make any major change like that. But you never know. It's the CFL. They make changes mid-season sometimes. It's probably going to happen. Where do you stand? Does this bother you at all? Because the return game is kind of one of those things that CFL fans have been like, this is what differentiates our game from the American game, is we have special teams matters more up here. We have kickoff returns. We have more punt returns. It's one of a, it's kind of a point of pride almost with CFL fandom. Where do you stand on this? Are you okay with them changing it? Do you want to see them change it? Or do you think this is all silly and just keep things the way they are?
If it's about safety, then go for it. If they have proof of increased injuries on kickoff returns, then we should try to protect the players. I would love for them to find a way to reduce the punting. And I know that CFL fans will fight back on that because that's part of the game and differentiates us from the NFL. But I don't like the amount of punts in the CFL game. I think if they try to reduce that, it would be a better game. I'm not really concerned with the kickoff. I'm kind of indifferent to this, to be honest. Like, do what you want. Like, if it's going to increase player safety, then go for it. That's all I have to say about it.
I'm glad you brought up the player safety aspect of it, because one of the things that was said when this kind of was first floated publicly was that the league has conclusive data that shows that injury rates are higher on kickoffs than on, like, quote unquote, like, right, like offensive and defensive plays. Has anyone seen that data? Like, I'm not saying that they're making it up, but with the CFL, we hear a lot of stuff like this. Do we not about how they have things that say this, that, or the other, and then we never actually see it. So it's kind of hard to, like, if any other pro sports league said, we have data that shows X, and then no one sees it, would you really believe them? Like, why are we inclined to believe the CFL that kickoffs have a higher rate of injury? And again, this is anecdotal on my part, but think about all the times you watch games, all the times you're in games in person. Do you really remember there being more instances of, like, the game being stopped for players coming off the field due to injury than on a regular play? Like, I don't. And I know that that's not evidence, that's anecdotal evidence, and it's not statistical data, but I'm just thinking back on, and maybe this is something I'll look at this year when I'm at games live, because it's easier to see live than it is on TV, because they cut to commercial after kickoff.
Yeah,
and a guy could be getting carted off and you wouldn't have any bloody idea. I think this might be something I'm going to maybe keep an eye on throughout the season, because I'm not going to say that this isn't true, because this is one of the things that the NFL used as well. They said, it's shown that guys get hurt more because of the high rates of collision and all that. And I understand it, and it makes sense. But to just come out and say that we have conclusive data that shows this, but without actually showing anyone the data, it feels a little like, just believe us, it's true. And in what other realm would we ever do that?
Yeah, I don't think that's crazy at all. I just don't know what's the motivation behind it. Like, what's in it for them to get rid of kickoffs? Besides the injury stuff, you know what I mean?
That's
like,
fair.
I don't see the benefit of them changing the rule. I don't know.
You want me to go full blown conspiracy theory?
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Those in charge want to make this league more like NFL light. We had the whole four down discussion. We had the merging with the XFL talk all those years ago. If I was to put on the tinfoil hat and say, why are they doing this? Well, the NFL's changing your kickoff rule. We got to change because we want to be in line with them. That's the crazy, make-believe conspiracy theory is that they want to make this game more like the NFL. And because they know.
They see the benefits in, appeasing the four down football fan. And maybe they can draw an audience from them. Bring them in if it's more similar to the four down game. I get what you're saying.
Well, and think of this too. Think of 40 years down the road. If this kickoff method that the NFL has adopted is now the standard, maybe college football adopts it as well in the States. Yeah. And that becomes what people are used to seeing. Then you turn on a Canadian game and you go, what the hell is this?
Right.
Now, if they don't decide to mess with the alignments and it's just simply, we're going to let teams scrimmage after a touchdown, I think that's literally just to try to increase offense. Like, that would be because the same reason why they moved that. Remember, because it used to be the 35. teams would get the ball at the 35 after a field goal. They moved it to the 40 because they are trying to increase offense. They shorten the hash marks in an attempt to increase offense. Mm-hmm. That to me would be you're losing, you're spending more time on offense and less time on special teams. Cause it's not taking away the, cause I think like, I kind of agree with you with kickoffs. It's less maddening or less infuriating. I don't think it's as
integral because to the kickoff, because something happens before the kickoff, right? Something exciting happens before the kickoff is not a two and out and a kick.
No. And you're right. It's either there's a touchdown, there's a field goal, there's the start of the game or the start of a half. So those are the only times the kickoffs happen. So something has already happened that gets you out of your seat, whether it's good or bad. With the punts and with kickoffs, it's like it's a kickoff. Punting is the one where there's that would be the major change, right? Like because that's where we don't have a fair catch and every punt is returned unless it goes out of bounds.
And I don't know, how you would even enforce to try to get rid of punts because it's not like you can here's an extra first down, you know?
Yeah,
take the first down. You know what I mean? So
like unless it becomes every punt play is like I remember there was talk because one of the things that the NFL's rules has done has now eliminated the surprise onside kick. And that's one of at least for me, my pushback on this change is that there was a Super Bowl where the Saints did this against the
first the play
Colts.
Of the game. Oh, the
first play,
of the, half,
first play of the second half.
Yeah.
And they did this and it was like the greatest thing you could have ever seen. It's like how the nuts on Sean Payton to pull that off in a Super Bowl. That's now gone. And I think that you lose something there. Now there was an idea float. I think the Baltimore Ravens, who are usually pretty galaxy brained with this stuff, like they think outside the box. It was like, instead of going for an onside kick, it's a 4th and 15 play from your own. I want to say it was your own 20. If you pick it up, keep the ball. And it's like, maybe that's something that it could be instead of it being, but then again, in the CFL, that would just be if you're like, well, on 3rd down, it's a 3rd and 15 to go. But what if it would have been 3rd and 6? Like, I don't think there's a way to get punts out of the game. And I'm trying to think of it on the fly here. I just don't think there's a way to get them out of the game, buddy. I think we just need better offenses because punts aren't a problem if it's not first down incomplete, second down incomplete punt, first down incomplete, second down incomplete punt.
Exactly.
First down runs. It's only a problem. Like if teams string together 6-play drives and they punt, you're not excited, but at least you saw something. It's the 2-yard run, incomplete pass, it bothers, I guess you. I won't say fans because I don't know how other fans feel, but that's what bothers you, right? It's the continuous punts. Not the fact that punting exists. It's that there's so rapid.
It's the amount of them. It's the ones that happen back to back to back to back that kind of just like slow down the game and it's just not exciting. But
well, and especially with the punt TV timeout,
right?
2 plays, punt TV timeout. Like that's to me where the slowing down of the game, and maybe that's. I don't know. We're getting kind of off course here. So if they change the kickoff rules, unless it was something like truly ridiculous, you don't really care either way, eh?
No, I don't feel strongly either way about it, really.
You do feel strongly about something else. We're going to get out on this one today. You've got a little bit of a rant that you want to get off your chest here, Mike. This is the forum to do it. So the floor is yours, pal. What do you got? What's grinding your gears today?
Well, you know, I'm seeing this talk about the Edmonton team name, and you know it's been reignited because the rumor of private ownership with Edmonton, and you know it's not only been on Twitter or X, it's been in my personal life as well. Like a guy comes into work, I talk to him, I like the guy, we start talking about the Edmonton football team and the private ownership, and the first thing he says is, you think they're gonna bring the old name back? And I'm just like, no man. Like, no, that's not going to happen. Like, just get over it already. And then I see on Twitter, I think it was Dustin Nielsen. He has a show. He was like, honest question, how much would a name change back to that name increase season ticket sales? Or is it just a bunch of empty promises from people saying they would? And there's just a ton of comments saying, I'd come back. And even for the guy that used to play in the CFL, like Eddie Steele, he said, I travel from Lloydminster to Hinton, Grand Prairie to Calgary and almost everywhere in between. In my travels, I've yet to meet one person who likes the name, and some have given up seasons because of it. People would come just to stick it to the team for the terrible change. I didn't realize Eddie Steele was so stupid. listen, they've sucked. The Edmonton Elks have sucked since they've been the Edmonton Elks. I don't doubt that there were some people that left and will never come back because of the name change. And that's their decision, and that's fine. But it's over. It's dead. It's a stupid name. It's a stupid idea to have a name, a team named after a group of people to reduce them to some kind of cartoonish character or, you know, less than human or something like that. And it's the, and I don't see any other races or group of people that have team names like this. Like, I guess you could say the Fighting Irish would be the only example, but it's always the native people, right? It's always the Cleveland Indians or the Washington Redskins or the Edmonton Eskimos. It's like these people have been reduced to less than, and they're just like kind of a joke to teams and to make logos of and all this stuff. I just think it's racist and it's just stupid. You wouldn't name a team the Caucasians. You wouldn't name the team the African Americans. You wouldn't name a team the Chinese. Or whatever, the Japanese or the Middle Easterns or whatever. It just, it doesn't make sense. And for people to be so obsessed, listen, I get it. There was a lot of success when they had that name. But you still have the logo. You still have the colors. You still have the same stadium. You still have the fight song with the words changed a little bit. Everything is basically the same, except you don't have a stupid racist name for your team. So to all the people that are screaming and shouting, bring it back, bring it back, bring it back. Fuck off. Leave us alone. We don't want you as fans, okay? I'm not an Elks fan. Well, as a CFL fan, we don't want you, okay? If you're that butthurt over a name change where the team still has the double E logo, still has the team colors, you know, get a fucking life, okay? I'm so sick of it. It's been fucking 4 years already. Get over it.
Such a dumb discussion to still be having. It's so, look, when this was announced, we were both, this is the strongest I think either of us have ever come out against it, but I was pretty like, yeah, change the stupid name. It's dumb. It's unnecessary. It doesn't fit with, it shouldn't have fit back then. It certainly doesn't fit today. But I don't believe for a second that there's people out there that would immediately watch the game. It's the same way I feel to a lesser extent about the idea of changing the game to four downs. Like, these are things, you are using this as an excuse to no longer or to not buy into this product. It's an excuse. It's not, you were never a season ticket holder. Yeah, I'm sure there are some people out there who are that angry about it, but I mean, if that's what gets you riled up, the fact that you have to call them the Elks instead of what you used to, like, to me, that's just, that, then you weren't that big of a fan to begin with, no matter how many season tickets you bought.
No,
and if that's the thing concern, that keeps you away, yeah. Come on.
If that's your biggest concern, you have a pretty good life, okay? Like, just, we just need to.
It's a football team. Yeah. It's a football team. The logo never said the name. It literally was, like you said, the double E. I mean, they had a polar bear for a while as part of their, it's not as if, like, nothing changes. And look, everyone says, oh, the team stinks and it's the curse of the name. Well, they're not going to stink forever. There's going to come a time, it could be this upcoming year, it could be a couple of years down the road, but there's going to come a time when Edmonton gets better. And the thing that people don't understand is Edmonton, their run coincided when they were the wealthiest team in the league and could pay, and there was no salary cap. Once the salary cap gets instituted, all of a sudden their advantages went away. And if you go and look at what their records were pre-salary cap and post-salary cap, that has a lot to do with it. It dispersed talent across the league. Like, you look at some of those old Edmonton teams and it's like, I mean, we talk about Warren Moon. Warren Moon won 5 straight Grey Cups. He was the backup for 2 of them. There is no way on earth that you would see, look what we see now in the CFL. Drew Brown, who was nowhere near what Warren Moon, Drew Brown, if Drew Brown becomes a quarter as good as Warren Moon, that'll be a massive success in the CFL. And yet the he gets into like 2 games and it's like, oh, this guy's going to be a starting quarterback. Winnipeg can't afford to keep him. He's got to go be a starter somewhere. Warren Moon, after 2 years in Edmonton, would have been starting for another team. After backing them up twice, I know he came into games and it was a different time, but under the current way that salaries are structured, Edmonton's not winning five straight cups because they're not able to keep that team together. Because you can't pay everybody. Like, yeah, they were great, and it was under a former name. That has nothing to do with why they're bad now. They're bad now because they hired the wrong coaches. I mean, they fired Jason Moss when they probably shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. But they've hired the wrong coaches, and they're in – every team goes through this. Ottawa's in – the Red Blacks are in the midst of a longer, terrible spell. You don't hear anyone going, you know what? If we change the name back to Rough Riders, probably do a little bit better.
Yeah.
And I get that there's no – I get that the Rough Rider name isn't a symbol of excellence like Edmonton's old name was, and there's not that lineage of greatness. But if you think a name change is the reason the team is not performing on the field, you're a moron. Like, I don't think there's any other way to put it. Like, I remember you did an episode talking about logos, right? And someone said, like, look how many Grey Cups they've won on the old logo, and look how many Grey Cups they've won under the new one. I'm choosing to believe that that person was saying that kind of tongue in cheek. Like, the reason I like the old logo, championship pedigree. That's why I like the old one better than the new one, because new one, we haven't won anything of it. And I choose to think of that more. And again, because it's a logo and not a racist caricature like you brought up, we can have a little bit more fun with it. But I choose to think that that's less, this is what I, oh, they changed the logo, that's why they're not winning. That's just stupid. You know what I mean? Like, when you break it down, if you take away the offensive aspect of it, and I know that that's a lot of that's the main reason why the team changed the name, and good for them. But if you take that away, and if they were just the Edmonton Electricians, and it's like, oh man, they had all that success when they were the Electricians, and now they've changed it to the Elks, and they stink.
I just wish they could be the Electricians again.
You would sound like an idiot. You look at that person and go, are you a moron? Yeah. Like, you sound like a buffoon, because it's the name has nothing to do with how good the team is. And if you think that they're only drawing 10,000, 12,000 fans because of the name, no, it's because they finished with 5 wins or less each of the last 3 years. If this is a 12-win team, people will go to the games. It's as simple as that.
I agree. I don't know if people are looking at it through the lens of like the 80s and the 70s when they had 40, 50, 60,000. Yeah,
the people who are complaining about this are not 22-year-olds, are not 32-year-olds. I mean, sure, there's some of them. But the majority of these people are 60, 55, 70. Like, they're the older generation. They're people who aren't with the new way. And that's just – and because the CFL fan base skews older, the people that are complaining about this, I guarantee you, if you took the median age of these people, it would be close to retirement age, quite frankly. These would be senior citizens and grandparents.
Yeah. I was saying that, like, you're never going to get back to that point of excellence that they had in the 70s with like attendance and stuff like that. But people will come back. I think people will come back. Edmonton's a pretty good sports town. I think if you have a winning team, you could get 25 to 30,000 people at a game. And that's really good for the CFL these days. You're never going to get back to the 50,000, 60,000. I would love it, but that's just not going to happen. So I think there can be a level of success that can be obtained in Edmonton, not to the amount of previous years, but a very good amount of people would show up if the team was good. It has nothing to do with the name, and we just need to ignore the people. Like, I'm doing them a service by talking about them right now. I should have just said no. I'm not gonna fucking, you know, talk about these losers anymore.
Yeah, you don't engage with it. You think it goes away, but
so this is the last.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing too. We also live in a day and age where fewer and fewer people are going to live events. Like, take the pandemic out of it, because I know that changed a lot of people's opinions on being at large gatherings. But with every game wasn't on TV in the 70s and the 80s. Every game wasn't on TV in the 90s and the early 2000s. Like, this is a recent phenomenon of having every CFL game, being able to watch it from the comfort of your own home. People aren't viewing them on 13-inch black and white monitors anymore. Like, the computer monitor that I'm recording the show on with you is larger than the television that was in my family room when I was growing up. And I'm sitting a foot away from it, and it feels small. You know what I mean? Like, people have 55 and 65 and, you know, 100-inch projectors in their homes to watch games. You don't have to worry about overpriced concessions. You can pause the game with the technology we have now. You can pause the game if you have to go to the bathroom. Like, I like to go to live events. I have season tickets to the Ticats. I have season tickets to Forge. I love going to live sporting events. That's what I choose to spend my discretionary income on because I have fun when I go to live games. That is my thing. Some people like to drink alcohol. Some people like to smoke weed. Some people like to go to the casino. Like we all have go to, I go to the movies. I don't go as much as I used to, but people like to do that. Or they go to concerts or they go to comedy shows or we all have our own vices. And like, for instance, when my dad and my brother lived in Hamilton for a few years, they had Ticats season tickets. But then after I think it was the 2018 season, they decided, oh, we're not going to get them anymore. And instead, they're going to watch the games from home. And that's okay. Like, my dad was getting up there in age, didn't want to climb the steps of the stadium anymore, just wanted and watches the games at home. Like, now my brother moved, so that necessitated him not being able to go either. But like,
oh, he's not a real fan.
Exactly. But that's what I mean. Like, the idea that you have to go to the game or that people are only fans if they go to the game, like, that's an archaic thought process that dates back to when, and I understand the CFL is still a gate-driven league, but it needs to get to the point where, and hopefully it will one day, where it's the television revenue that's fueling this league, not the ticket revenue. You know what I mean? Like, television revenue does a good job now, but more people will stay home and watch because it's easy. You have more access. It's more comfortable. The idea that just because the Elks only have 13,000 people at a game, or even the Argos only have 13,000, it's like, it's not to say that there aren't other fans out there who just choose, I don't want to go to the game, I'd rather watch from home. And I mean, the TV ratings are consistently pretty good across the board for CFL teams. So it's not as if there's a lack of interest. There's just a lack of going. Now, if Edmonton starts this season 7-1, you best believe those 13,000 people crowds are going to be over the 20. Like, winning cures all. It really, really does. Now, there are some teams, Hamilton, I think, is one. Saskatchewan's kind of one, although even with the Riders, we've seen a decrease in their interest. Winnipeg might be one now that they've gotten really good. So I'm curious to see what Winnipeg looks like post this iteration of the team, like how big their crowds are once they're no longer the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
But there are some teams that draw decently well. We saw it in Montreal. Montreal, I think Montreal's going to draw really well this year because Montreal cheers for a winner. And when the Owls were going to Grey Cups every year, Molson Stadium was the place to be, and that place was – they were hanging from the rafters. That when they were bad for 7 years, that didn't happen. So let's see how that goes. If Edmonton starts winning, people will go to games. I think it's as simple as that.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. They just need to start – you know, putting a good product on the field, winning games at home, especially. And, you know, even last year, they had a couple of games where it was close to 30,000 people. So the fan base is there. They just need a reason to come back. And I think they will.
Yeah. And the reason to come back wins. So you win. And no one gives a tinker's damn about any sort of
no one name. Would be talking about the old name if they put up a, you know, even like a 10-8 or 11-7 season or even a 9-9 season after the couple
isn't there a small part of you as a CFL fan, take your Ticats fandom out of it, I wouldn't mind seeing the Elks win the cup this year because it would shut all those people up, because it would end the idea that this team is cursed because they changed. Like, what do you pivot to next if Edmonton goes out there and they finish 12-6, and even if they make the Grey Cup, what are you going to talk about now? Yeah. What are you going to say now?
And leading up to that, they have, you know, 25,000 or 30,000 at some games, and they start seeing the, you know, the comeback.
They get a home playoff game that has 37,000 people there.
I don't doubt that could happen. So, and we'll see if some of those people, you know, jump back on the bandwagon once the team's good again, and then pretend that they didn't put up a stink for all these years about the name. So I would mind, you know, not just because I live in Edmonton, but as you said, just to stick it to those people for the Elks to be good again.
Yeah, I think I will take on, I'm not a two favorite team guy, but I think this year I will secretly root for Edmonton, hoping that they get better just to put those morons in their place. And maybe they can go honk their horns about a carbon tax or something, because I'm sure there's a lot of crossover in those two fan bases there. Okay. All right. Anyway, I think it for this week, Mike. I think we've said all we have to say. So for PodsQB this week, I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.